A city disrupted. Women about to give birth, dogs still tethered to their posts, and a decided whiff of halitosis. These are memorable images of normal everyday life in a Roman town, suddenly interrupted in midstream. There are plenty more. The loaves of bread found in the oven, abandoned as they baked. The team of painters who scarpered in the middle of redecorating a room, leaving behind their pots of paint and a bucketful of fresh plaster high up on a scaffold. When the scaffold collapsed in the eruption, the contents of the bucket splashed right across the neatly prepared wall, leaving a thick crust still visible today. But scratch the surface and you find that the story of Pompeii is more complicated and intriguing. In many ways, Pompeii is not the ancient equivalent of the Marie Celeste, the 19th century ship mysteriously abandoned, the boiled egg still, so it said, on the breakfast table. It is not a Roman town simply frozen in mid-flow. For a start, the people of Pompeii had seen the warning signs hours, if not days, before. The only eyewitness account of the eruption we have is a couple of letters written a quarter of a century after the event to the historian Tacitus by his friend Pliny, who had been staying on the Bay of Naples when the disaster struck. No doubt composed with the benefit of hindsight and imagination, these make it clear that the escape was still possible even after the cloud, like an umbrella pine, had appeared from the crater of Vesuvius. Pliny's uncle, the most famous victim of the eruption, only died because he was asthmatic and because he bravely or stupidly decided that he needed to take a closer look at what was going on in the interests of science. And if, as many archaeologists now think, there had been a series of tremors and small earthquakes in the days or months leading up to the final disaster, those too would have encouraged people to quit the area. For it was not only Pompeii itself that was threatened and eventually engulfed, but a wide swathe of land to the south of Vesuvius, including the towns of Herculaneum and Stabiae. Many did leave, as the tally of bodies found in the city confirms. Around 1,100 have been unearthed in the excavations. We need to make allowance for those that still lie in the unexcavated part of the town. About a quarter of ancient Pompeii is as yet unexplored, and for those human remains missed in earlier excavations. Children's bones can easily be mistaken for those of animals and discarded. Even so, it seems unlikely that more than 2,000 of the inhabitants would have lost their lives in the disaster. Whatever the total population, and estimates vary from about 6,400 to 30,000, depending on how tightly packed we imagine these people to have lived, or on what modern comparisons we choose, this was a small or very small proportion. People fleeing in the reign of pumice may have taken with them only what they could grab and carry. Those with more time will have taken more of their possessions. We must imagine a mass exodus from the city with donkeys, carts and barrows as the majority of the population left, loading up as many of their household effects as they reasonably could. Some made the wrong decision, locking away their most precious possessions, intending to return when the danger had passed. This is what accounts for some of the magnificent treasures, stunning collections of silver, for example, found in houses in and near Pompeii. But for the most part, what has been left for archaeologists to discover is a city after its inhabitants had hurriedly packed up and left. This may help to explain why the houses of Pompeii seem so sparsely furnished and so uncluttered. It may not be that the prevailing aesthetic of the first century CE was a kind of modernist minimalism. Much of the household bric-a-brac had very likely been carted off by its loving owners, by the wagon load. This speedy decampment may also explain some of the oddities of what we do find in the city's houses. If, for example, a pile of gardening tools comes to light in what appears to be a rich dining room, it may be that, surprising as it may seem to us, that was where they were regularly kept. It may also be that in the flurry of departure, as possessions were gathered together and choices were made about